I'm Francesca Millican-Slater, and welcome to set two of Stories to Tell in the Middle of the Night. I tell you tales that aren't always about the night, but carry a sense of the night, of being awake when no one else is, unrest, when the sleep won't come, the things that keep us awake, regrets, urges, lovers, love, loss, frustrations. They are stories I tell myself when I can't find my sleep. First up, the man who burns down cities. He would deal with the frustrations of the day by building a tiny city populated with all the people that had pushed past him in the street or not held the door open, didn't acknowledge a thank you, didn't smile when he smiled. He would write down the time and the place it happened, a brief description of the person, and make a tiny cardboard avatar of them. He would spend months doing this, building places of work, corners and parks. And then, when he felt it was populated enough, he would take the tiny city into the garden, bucket of sand just in case, and he'd burn it down. You could smell it for miles around. The next day, with the very first perceived slight, he'd start building the city all over again. In this set of stories to tell in the middle of the night, it's the frustrations we're looking at. You can find all available episodes to download at iTunes, podcast, or where you usually get your podcasts. But today, tonight, the things that churn around your brain to stop you sleeping, the indignations we invent about others who cut in and cut up, like our tiny arsonist who opened today. The silent, seething, passive aggressions, playing out the things we should have said or done in response to the things people shouldn't have said or done. Minor irritations, major irritations, that fucking massive irritation keeps us awake. Crawling up your skin, sits behind your eyeballs, in your ear, and worm on repeat, earworms. Mine is usually the Pina Colada song, or If There's Any Justice in the World by Lamar. Do have a Google of that if you're not familiar with either of them. Maybe they'll become yours. So here's to things that go round and round at night. Let the music play, or not. It started the day after they moved in, all hope and home and new plaster and brick. Low at first, so low they weren't sure if it wasn't the beating of their hearts. They ignored it for a while, neither one of them mentioning the steady, pulsing sound to the other, but when they went to lie their bodies down, it was coming through the walls. Louder. Louder. Perhaps it was just tonight, they had just moved in and they didn't really want to cause a fuss or actually have to talk to the next door neighbours, so they both lay in the dark, wishing the other would do something. It got louder the next night, and louder the night after that. They scowled at the walls, thought about banging on them, going around and having a word. Instead, they slammed doors in the hope that the neighbours would get the idea, and if they saw them in the street, they would take a deep breath and they would give them a wave. Hiya. It wasn't even good music or something you could sing along to, just an incessant, nagging beat that would sometimes... until it started again. Then, one of them came up with an idea that didn't involve an actual conversation, an automated musical response attached to the wall set off by the vibrating beats so that every time the beats started, Taylor Swift's Shake It Off would play at top stereo level. The hint was not taken, and Taylor had a knock-on effect upon the small row of houses as whenever she began to shake it off, the house next door to that turned up. Enya? Yeah, really, Enya. And the house next door to that turned up. Atna sang geeks. And the house next door to that responded with a rousing Tchaikovsky. During the day, no one said anything to anyone. The shop at the end of the road ran out of earplugs. Dark circles grew underneath everybody's eyes. Waves and small smiles were still given from front doorsteps and behind parked cars. But every night from 9 p.m. onwards, the passive, aggressive, musical dominoes would knock through the walls. That was The Neighbours. They do say that hell is other people. And if you have a rummage around the internet, you can find all sorts of videos that echo this seething sentiment. I used to have an upstairs neighbour called Bigfoot who would spend the early hours rolling balls across the floor for his cat, so I imagined. Or an ex-housemate who'd spend the morning wearing clogs on wooden floors. I can't stop the noises that other people make, but perhaps in the dark hours we can find comfort in other people's discomfort. Here's one for the lovers. Supermarket argument. Thursday night, a row occurred that raised dormant truths with an intensity that neither one of them had expected. But Thursday night was and had always been shopping night, and any disruption to this domestic schedule would give magnitude to the vicious accusations that still lay thick in the air. Words clipped, decisions made, reusable carrier bags packed, and off they set. They were silent on the way there, communicating only by agitated looks and impatient gestures. Exit the car, the expanse of the car park, the supermarket beyond the trolley park. She walks ahead, pretending that she's not really with him, hoping that people don't see that they are exactly what they appear to be. One of those couples that isn't talking to each other. He drags his feet behind, checks his phone in a careful construct of cantankery. But all around them, people shove children into cars, wait for spaces, push and pull at trolleys. He quickens his pace, their footsteps almost fall in time. The trolley park. Coin at the ready. He weaves through the throngs of people, ignoring the carriers with depth, with wheelchair actions and child seats, and after a patient wait and pounce manoeuvre, he finds that holy grail. The half-size shopping trolley. Just like you know she likes. She admires his confident collection. They swish in together through automatic doors into crackling announcements over piped music, sweaty, teary children, fluorescent lights, overbearing bakery smells. They cautiously guide around. A 2 for £4 on mixed cheeses offer provokes a conversation with all the politeness and niceties of two people who might be willing to compromise. A brief pause in the DVD aisle could have been a downfall in their temporary tempered truce, but he holds up a film they'd hated together. Taken with this mood of generosity, she mentions that they were in no hurry to get out, no kids to drop off, no tea time deadlines to meet. They could take their time. And take their time they did, taking pace, shelf by shelf, item by item, slowly they creep into each other's conscience. Eyes meet over plump tomatoes, hands brush while reaching for the milk. A lengthy discussion about biscuits is carried out with sensual suggestions and eyebrows cocked. They carry on. Aisle to aisle, words flirting, giggles rising. He tries a tentative touch at the small of her back. She gives him the smile she always keeps for best. He looks around, bends to her ear, and whispers to her, "The people, they are not." Oh. They are not that aging couple pricing tablets against the liquid. Oh, and they're not that family of infinite proportions whose profanities can be heard down every aisle. Oh, and they're not that couple, the ones agonizing over organic beans in pseudo-baby voices. And they're definitely not. The singles shopping for half-size bottles of wine, solitary potatoes, baskets full of Cinzano and cat food. They are in this together. In those words, he casts a short-term spell. By the time they're at the checkout, they are standing with their fingers interlinked, all excess anger, all blame and seething, all thoughts of escape have been compared, contrasted, and lost to the people around them. So now, when the walls of their home ache with bitterness and regret, they go shopping. Food shopping. Now, I don't know about you, but I can often be found in the aisles of small supermarkets muttering to myself, racked with indecision, thinking I should probably go somewhere else, independent. But maybe it's better the devil you know than the devil you don't, eh? Lovers. Perhaps the familiar, the common ground, the well-intentioned becomes an itch that needs to be scratched. In Pearl. She noticed the itch the first time his footsteps seemed too heavy, his laugh too loud. Right in the crook of her elbow, a small bump, an excess of flesh, a slow, crawling irritation. They both face the TV, dinner on their laps, glasses at their feet, eyes on the screen. "I think I've been bitten," she said. Eyes flickered from the screen. "Oh, don't scratch it, love," he offered. "You shouldn't scratch it." Fleas, bedbugs, mites. Maybe one of those beasts had crawled inside her, under her skin. It was only that specific point on her body that itched, nowhere else. It felt like there was something underneath, gathering weight, becoming solid. She vacuumed the house, every corner, every inch, moved the furniture, sucked dust from the cushions, disinfected the cat. She wore a plaster over the itch, a layer of cooling cream beneath the surface. Two frozen cottage pies in the oven, and she went about admiring her handiwork, her neatness. Not a scrap of dust, not a hint of dirt. The door shut too loudly, her fingers twitched. He kissed her on the cheek, slobber on her skin, tried to look into her eyes. How's your rich love? Hey, hey, as he pulled her close. You've done a good job here, though I never minded the dust, bit of dirt, made it ours, our dirt. He laughed into her hair, made it damp with hot breath. The itch started deep down below her skin. They both faced the TV, dinner on their laps, glasses at their feet, eyes on the screen. He changed the channel without asking. She scratched atop the plaster. She saw the meat that got caught in his teeth, and she could feel the rise of the hard lump beneath the plaster. Leave it, love, he said without looking, eyes on the TV. That night, she didn't sleep. Every time she closed her eyes, she felt a desire to rub herself raw. She used the flat of her hand to prevent opening her skin, covered her palm in spit, rubbed it in to calm the constant prickling. Lying next to her, denting the mattress, he mocked her with his steady, sleep-ridden breaths. She felt him wake up, a stirring, a snorting, a cough. He leaned over her, covered in his stale air and sweated in skin, stroked her hair away from her eyes, and he bent his head down to kiss the soft part of her inner elbow where the itch was, and for a moment the moisture from his lips bore relief. Gritted teeth in frustration at the proximity of his beard, his rough sandpaper surface, wishing that he would not waste his kisses, but rub away the itch with the hair on his face. That day, she fumigated the whole house, the sheets, the sofa, covered them in powder disinfectant. She threw out the feather pillows, gave away the cat. She covered the sofa and the bed in plastic sheeting. Then the desire to scratch wasn't so bad. But the lump that had been the cause of the itch had become something solid beneath her skin. She could pinch it between her fingers, roll it around like a ball bearing. She longed to take a knife to it, to dig it out of her arm. She was sure it was infected, probably poisonous, that the mite, the bedbug, the flea had made a home in her arm, spawning its offspring into her body. She booked an emergency doctor's appointment, her fingers twisting the hard lump in her arm. The doctor seemed amused, unconcerned, said it was just a bite turned bad, a reaction to an unexpected allergy, that the lump was just the body trying to push out the poison of whatever had made her itch. He gave her anti-inflammatories, antihistamines, told her to rest, let the swelling go down. It wasn't just a swelling. She could feel something underneath her skin. He came home that evening, takeaway in hand. Her fingers twitched to her inner elbow. Oh, just an allergy gone wrong, he smiled. Come here, you poor thing. And she stepped away from him. She said that she couldn't be touched. Said it could be infectious, that she didn't want to give him anything, that the doctor had said it best, that they had no skin-to-skin contact. Well, we could sleep with our clothes on. He laughed too loudly, spittle flying carelessly from his mouth. They both faced the TV, either end of the plastic-covered sofa, dinner on their laps, glasses at their feet, eyes on the screen. He chewed loudly, mouth open, laughing food. She touched the hard ball on the inner of her elbow. He dropped his fork, picked it up, licked it. Eyes not taken off the screen, the itch started up. Don't touch it, love. His hand crept towards her on the plastic. Don't touch me, she said. His hand stopped. You don't want to catch it. That night, they slept in separate beds, and her itch, her lump, remained untouched. She slept soundly. He woke her in the morning with a spilled cup of tea, a smile of dry lips. I won't kiss you goodbye, he said. Her fingers twitched. That day, she ordered new furniture, burnt the old stuff in the back garden, packed his bags, wrote a note, pinned it to the front door, changed the locks. And she took a knife to the lump. What was once itchy, carved into her skin, pushed it up. What lay beneath? A shiny ball, cream in colour, hard in texture, a solid sphere of pus that looked just like a pearl. Thank you for listening to Stories to Tell in the Middle of the Night. That was The Frustrations, the small irritations that grow in size in your head at night. The next set of stories are part one of The Losses, The Found and Lost. If you have enjoyed this Stories to Tell, please let us know by rating, reviewing, tweeting, messaging us. You can visit storiestotellinthemiddleofthenight.com or tweet us at Middle Night Tale. We are originally releasing the episodes weekly over 9 weeks from May 2018, but if you're listening from the future, hello. All 9 sets of stories are available to download at iTunes Podcast or where you usually get your podcasts. They have been released in an order which references the next episode, but they don't have to be listened to in that order. They are made so that each set of stories stands on its own, although if you like them, I would listen to episode 9 last. Its theme is hope as morning breaks, and that's a good thing to listen to last. We have also released a selection of BSL video interpretations of these podcasts. These can be found at storiestotellinthemiddleofthenight.com. Stories to Tell started as a theatre show, born from ideas of people, friends, awake and up in pain or anxiety and not being able to sleep. These stories are made to be listened to when you are awake, a light still on or not, although I have been told that I have a voice that sends dogs to sleep, in a good way, but I think. It is written and voiced by me, Francesca Milliken-Slater. Sound design is by Ian Armstrong, with podcast support from Mark Stedman, produced by Pippa Frith, supported by Arts Council England. Copies of the original theatre text are published by Ink Concrete. You can buy or download at inkconcrete.com or on Amazon. Stories to Tell in the Middle of the Night, the theatre show, was originally commissioned by Birmingham Repertory Theatre and was supported by Arts Council England, China Plate and the Sir Barry Jackson Trust. It was produced by Pippa Frith. I'm Francesca Milliken-Slater, and you can find out more about what I do at francescamillikenslater.co.uk. Ian is Ian with two I's at ianarmstrong.net. Pippa is at pippafrith.co.uk, and Mark Stedman is at stedman.io. Listen out for a bonus episode where myself, Ian and Pippa will be in conversation about sound, the show, how it became a podcast, and if Ian has been recording cutting his toenails.